Our Bachelor Classics coverage of Juan Pablo's 2014 season brings us to Fantasy Suites Week in St. Lucia, which, for Andy, quickly began to feel like a Motel 6 in Pasadena. She leaves the tournament in a bachelorette-clinching swan song that Juan Pablo thought was okay, and which Bachelor referees thought was pure gold. It leaves us with a Claire vs. Nikki final that we all know the result of, but who did the most to set herself up for success? Our answer may surprise you, or, as Juan Pablo said to Chris Harrison, it also might not. Either way, it's all coming up on The Bachelor Zone.
Welcome to The Bachelor Zone.
Welcome back to The Bachelor Zone, your spin-free zone for hard-hitting Bachelor stats and analysis. I'm your host, Michael Wally, coming at you from Santa Monica, California. With me, as always, two of my dearest friends and your favorite Bachelor pundits in Hollywood, I've got Zachary Pike.
It's okay, Wally. It's okay.
And in Hollywood, Daniel A. Duddy.
Oh, Wally, you're one of my dearest friends, too.
Thank you, guys. I really am starting to believe that it's all going to be okay. And Juan Pablo said that a number of times to Andy in this legendary exit of hers from the show. And we're going to get to that in a second. But first, let's jump right into our top headline brought to you by Motel 6, When You're Here, Your Family. And what we want to start with is the fact that as much as Claire and Nikki insist on avoiding eye contact with each other, their paths have been on this crash course toward one another all season long. And it's culminating in this final that we all figured was about to happen, where it's two of what seems like the two top players in the game, and they clearly both do not like each other. Guys, going into this final, who do you think did the most to set herself up for success? Who's executing at the highest clip right now?
I think it's got to be Nikki. I think the fact that she really just played heads up the whole time, was emotional, was forward with everything, but not getting in her own way. She knew what she wanted. Also, the fact that they went to the fantasy suite without really any thought about it. The only thing that she was hesitant about or having any kind of struggle with was just whether or not to drop, when to drop the L-bomb, not whether or not to even do it, but when to do it. And whereas on Claire's side of things, she had all kinds of stuff to grapple with. So I'd say it was Nikki's game. I mean, going out of hometowns as well. Her hometown was flawless.
Yeah, I think I'd have to agree. I think even though I kind of believe that Claire is just as much head over heels in love with Juan Pablo at this point, I think Nikki had did a better job dropping the L bomb. I think with Claire saying I'm loving falling in love with you, it wasn't as much of an affirmative declaration of love as Nikki just saying I love you. So I got to give it to Nikki right now.
You know, did you guys notice the when Nikki dropped the L-bomb, this was almost going to be my MOCT, but I decided against it. But the composer of the show, it seemed like the music was confused of what music to play. When she said, I love you, and then Juan Pablo said, okay, like, it's okay. He didn't say it back, obviously. He said, I like you, I think, eventually. But he was like, oh, yeah, that's cool. I'm happy to hear that. And then there was a nice comedic beat, pause, and then the romantic music came in. It was like, what do we do? Okay, go. Just do it. Just play the music.
It was it's like one of those sneak football plays where it's so crafty that like even the cameraman gets faked out. They're like, wait, where's the ball? Like,
that little jerk. It was that motion with the music, and I cracked up. I did a spit take.
Yeah, I agree with what you just said, Daniel A., that saying that you're falling in love with the process of falling in love with somebody, that's like saying, I heard it from a friend who heard it from a friend who heard it from a friend. It loses credibility when you put in too many layers like that. And so I think that's where Claire lost her way a little bit in that regard. And also, think about Nikki with the dropping of the L-bomb. With most title contenders that we see on the show, they're dropping it somewhere between week 5 to 7-ish, and sometimes even as soon as week 4, really hot contenders can pull it off. She took a risk here. She waited a really long time to drop this, and yet it worked out flawlessly for her. It was dropped at a perfect time, and now I think it's a really close race. I would say it's 53-47 in Nikki's favor right now, but she does seem like the one in the driver's seat, just with her precise execution in every aspect, particularly with the L-bomb.
Well, I think you bring up a good point about the late album, Wally. I'll tell you, I've been playing a lot of NCAA football 2012 in quarantine. Wow. And let me tell you, that's one of the only, it was $60. What? NCAA football has like this crazy market because of licensing.
Oh.
Where the latest one is, it's like $200 for this 6-year-old video game. Anyway, my copy was $60, still way too much. Anyway, when you play NCAA football during the recruiting process, because you're a college football team and you go to get prospects, if you see that they're in, if a certain prospect is in your top five or they're, you're in their top five and you're ranked as their number one and you haven't offered them a scholarship yet near the end of the season, but other teams have offered the scholarship, and then you do offer that scholarship, it's an instant signing every time.
Oh, wow.
I think that's what happened here, if you guys are able to follow that metaphor. That the longer you hold out with the I love you, but you can still lead the pack, the more impactful it's going to be. So I think that's great that Nikki was able to do that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. She was able to keep herself ahead of the pack in other ways. And then the fact that she waited so long with this L-bomb and has it hanging there and hanging there, it really does build the tension, doesn't it? To the point that when you finally do drop it so late in the season, it hits really hard and it has more meaning. And I think that that's exactly what happened with Juan Pablo.
Yeah, I think the thing we're seeing here too, guys, is that Nikki is the easiest, you know, like a Lionel Richie song. She's just easy. And why she's easy, we don't really know, but it's like, it's, and I don't mean easy in the sleazy kind of way. I mean easy in just the, everything's copacetic. She doesn't ever really let anything get dramatic. And in the, in looking back on this season, and especially with what we see with Juan Pablo and Andy later on, I think that's what made her successful this season, is not having arguments, not getting into things, not wanting drama. It's like the antithesis of what we've seen in recent years of like, she's not, I mean, drama in the house, obviously in the locker room, but not with Juan Pablo whatsoever. It's just all easy, greasy, beautiful cover girl.
Yeah, it's been a really seamless season for her, to the point where I wonder if maybe she should have sprinkled in some adversity at some point. Maybe it's almost too easy. And it could, because a lot of times with someone who wins the title, at some point they sprinkle in that adversity at some point. She might go undefeated this year, though. Juan Pablo seems to be that into her right now. And also, this was the episode for me where I feel like I'm starting to see the fine but distinct difference between executing in the regular season and executing in the playoffs. It really is a different animal. I mean, look, if you want to talk about Claire's regular season and how great her numbers were, I'll be the first in line to have that conversation. I am blown away by what an incredible regular season she had. The numbers that she put up, especially when you consider the fact that she somehow eluded this dead ball era that's been plaguing all the other players, it's a sensational accomplishment. But what I'm noticing in the playoffs, and especially this week, is she lacks that intangible that Nikki has of making Juan Pablo feel like the cameras aren't even there. That's something that you can't really teach. And it's something that at this point in time, Claire hasn't really seemed to master. Everything that she's saying to him, it's on the offensive end, they're things that technically score very well and will keep you in the race, but they reek of being pre-planned, of being wrote, of a producer tossing that to you and saying, please say it at some point because it'll sound great when you say it for the media. Nikki doesn't do that. And that's the advantage I feel like she has.
Yeah, she's a natural. I guess there's no other way to say it. You think it's fascinating that she got the rose the first time almost every single week. I think there was only two weeks in this entire run that she didn't get her very first, the very first rose out of the gate, every rose ceremony. And we saw that again tonight. And the way she, you know, just carried herself, that rose ceremony could have been tricky, but it ended up being just another easy peasy thing that she could just pull off. It was really something to watch. She's fucking great.
And, you know, I think I may have said this at the start of the season, but watching the two of them, it really reminds me of watching Garrett and Blake battle it out during Becca's season. And now Blake, he was nipping at Garrett's heels the entire year and sometimes at some points had surpassed him. But the difference between the two of them at the end of the day was that Blake was taking such hard swings and trying so hard to say and do the quote unquote correct thing at every single turn that he just ran out of gas in the final. Whereas Garrett never doubted the fact that he was going to be there and that he was going to win.
I wouldn't have brought it up unless you brought it up, but we know now that it's breaking news that Garrett is now police, right? You guys know this?
Oh, that's right. He's police.
He's problematic. And it's actually good. Becca Kufrin on the Right Side of History saying that their relationship may now be in question because of his stance on pro policing. So, or pro over policing, I should say. So that's some fun news. We saw it a mile away, but.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We were caught back when he was liking all those alt-right Instagram posts. Yeah,
you could see it.
It's just, it is who he is, and it's coming out again.
Yeah, duck's a duck a duck.
But then, so we have the finals coming up in a couple weeks, and it should be a good one to watch. It seems like Nikki's definitely in the driver's seat, but Claire is right there, and I feel like it's going to go down to the wire. We'll see what happens. But the big headline from this episode was Andy's swan song. My goodness, I have never seen somebody catch the ick so aggressively all at once, and she really did. It was, and she really let him have it too. It was very fun to watch her say goodbye to Juan Pablo, and for me, it's the moment that she clinched being the next Bachelorette for herself. And I want to know what you guys think of it. Is that Andy's goodbye in this episode? Was it almost too good for the game?
Guys, I think that Andy's goodbye was foul. You know, I was not a fan of it. Yeah, I kind of felt like she came in, she went to him, said, I am, you know, she sent her video, really prolonged it, said, I need to talk about this in person. I don't know why they did the whole video thing. That was strange. Just another step towards the shoe dropping. She comes in, they sit down on the curb or whatever, wherever the hell they're sitting. And she tells him, yeah, I'm not. Sorry, go ahead.
It was kind of a stoop, Dutty. I just want to make clarification there.
It was
much nicer.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what it was.
Let's not give her too much credit and call it a curb.
No. This is stoop.
It was kind of a shitty looking stoop. She gets on that shitty looking stoop and she tells him, yeah, I'm not, you know, I'm going to leave. And he says, okay, I'm sorry to hear it. Sad to see you go, but there's nothing I can do. I can't make you be in love with me. That makes Andy furious. I, for the life of me, you know, we had all this build up about how Juan Pablo was the worst bachelor from a moral standpoint. This guy, we were told, was Satan. I still have yet to see him do anything bad. You know, right now we're in a moment of hyper awareness about morality, about wokeness, about doing the right thing, being respectful to people. I don't think, I was expecting a cancelable event. I was expecting Juan Pablo pressured her into sex, that he was rude, that he, said something sexist or mean. Her complaint from her was that he talked too much about himself. I gotta be honest, is that great date etiquette? No, but is that something to, you know, if it's not working out, just leave. You know, like Juan Pablo said, if you don't want to be here, don't be here. I don't understand why she had to prolong it.
Yeah, I think it came as a very nice. I think it came as a shock at the time because he came off pretty sweet most of the season. Dumb maybe, but not malicious or bad. And this episode, there was a marked change in his sort of demeanor that I clocked it as like he like turned up his Tony Montana 30%. And he was a little bit more chauvinistic. He was a little bit more greasy when it came down to like his confessionals talking about, you know, having the innuendo, which happens every fantasy suite week. I mean, there's always some sexual innuendo happening. But the way that he was kind of like, yeah, I got these gals here. And he wasn't set on any one necessarily, but he seemed like he was, it felt like he was hustling three girls, You know, he was a guy like a Casanova out on the town who was dating three women at the same time, and they didn't know about each other, even though these ones did know about each other. So I'm not saying you're wrong, but I think the vibe that he put off this episode is leaps and bounds more kind of creepy and malicious and sociopathic than he's been the entire season. He's not even close to how some bachelors have been. I agree. I think he gets a bad rap with everything said and done, especially the way some people have acted. But, and I think you're right about Andy. She didn't have to. I think she just wanted to tell him that she didn't like him. You know what I mean? She could have easily just left. She could have just been like, "Hey, I'm not feeling it."
She wanted him to feel bad.
Yeah.
She wanted a pound of flesh, but I don't think that's fair. I don't think you're entitled to that. I don't understand. You know, I understand that maybe the producers came in and said, "Hey, Andy, we want to, you know, stir up some drama here." But if you're asking me as a viewer, would that have helped her bachelorette candidacy? I would say no.
Oh, wow.
I felt it was unreasonable.
To me, that's the only...
You know, and to call him... Yeah.
That's the only reason that he did that is the whole bachelorette thing. Or I think they needed her to have more of a story coming out of there and more of a something to be aggrieved about. Now, the only thing that maybe throws a wrench in both of our ideas is what happened in the fantasy suite, how malicious he was, how it sounded to me like he was just talking about the other girls and she didn't appreciate that. And then he was being a dude in a lot of senses and just talking over her, maybe not talking about, you know, not asking her questions, saying it's okay. By the way, that was very funny the way she didn't, how annoyed she was by it's okay and how much of a cornerstone of his personality saying it's okay is.
And I don't even think he had realized that about himself until she pointed it out.
Felt unfair.
You thought that was unfair? I think that's why America, I think a lot of America doesn't like someone like him who is that chill and that laissez-faire. I think being from Venezuela, being culturally where he's from, I think him and his ex-wife have a very good relationship. I think he's pretty chill about matters of the heart. And this show is not a place for that. And people don't want to see someone being like, yeah, you know, sorry, it didn't work out. That is life. Like, I think he said that's life a few times, which is what he means to say when he says it's okay. He's like, ah, life is a joke. You might as well have a cigarette and a French beret on his head. You know, he's all existential about it. And I like that. I like that kind of, you know, I like that having that stance when it comes to matters of the heart. America doesn't. America doesn't like that one bit. They want you to wear your heart on your sleeve and actually give a shit, even when you don't need to.
Well, listen, we don't know everything that was said in the fantasy suite that night. We do know what happened in the conversation, dramatic exit afterward. In all events, based on what we know, I agree with you guys that what he said and did, maybe you could call it rude. I certainly don't think it was cancelable. But here's where I really disagree with you guys, and I feel the need to come to Andy's defense here. She recognizes that this is the 9th week. This is the penultimate round of a grueling 10-week tournament. And she could have very easily just left or said goodbye on the video, but she knew, no, I owe it to him to do the right thing and say to his face why I am leaving this tournament. Because that's a huge thing to do, to exit this heralded tournament on your own volition like that. So she knew to present it to him in person, face to face. Juan Pablo didn't give her that same respect. I admire the notion of being like, of saying, oh, it's okay, I'm not going to let this get me down. But this is week 9. You owe her a grimace, a head shake, some kind of sign that this is disappointing to you in some way. He didn't give her any of that.
Let me tell you why you're wrong, Raleigh. So he said it after everything went down. Sorry, he said if she would have came up to me and just said, I'm sorry, I'm not feeling this. I'm not feeling you. I want to go home. He said he would have been heartbroken at that point. But she didn't do that. She came and put on her assistant, a district attorney hat, and started litigating the crap out of what he did and did not say and whether or not default is in his vocabulary and yada, yada, yada. And you could see it happen to him in real time. He checked out of the relationship immediately and said, I don't want. And I think his callousness and his ability to check out when there was two other hearts on the line is what America didn't like about him. I think if Andy wanted to actually have her day in court, no pun intended, she should have just gone up there and said, hey, I'm too good for this. See you later. That would have done, well, you know, what she wanted to accomplish.
But what I was going to say is that it ended up working. I think it was the very thing that made the producers go, wow, she can come out with a huge electric output in a big moment, even in a heartbreaking moment, she can have an output like this. She's going to be do a great job in the quarterbacking position. We can trust her in the driver's seat. That's where she showed that she can carry the load on her shoulders for an extended period of time all the way down the field. I don't know if they would. I don't know if they would have the same conclusion if she just said, "Peace, I'm out of here."
Hmm. Yeah.
What do you think, Daddy?
I think we're having two different discussions because I do agree with you, Michael, that her putting on that show is what honestly it was a patsy move. It was for the producers. Whether or not she actually felt that way, to me it doesn't matter. You're right. She was, you know, that was what helped enable her become the Bachelorette for them, not for me. I was all on board the Andy train until that moment. I respect Juan Pablo's authenticity, even if that authenticity is to not have an emotional response. It would have been a lie. It would have been a lie if he cried when he didn't need to cry. It would have been a lie if he blew up when he didn't need to blow up. This is a man who he felt about the situation that he took a stoic response. That's what he should do. That's what we've appreciated about him up until this point in the season. Peter would have bawled his eyes out. But Peter's not a good bachelor.
But wait a second, Daniel. Let's roll the tape back a little bit to when Juan Pablo said goodbye to Chelsea, said goodbye to Charlene. In those moments, you could see it, and there were tears coming out of his eyes. He was welling up. He was taking it very, very deeply. It was hard for him. How's Andy supposed to feel when he's in tears about Charlene and Chelsea leaving, and then she leaves as the third place finisher, and he had just told her, by the way, that she barely made it here, which is a rude thing to say. Maybe defensible, but it is rude no matter how you cut it. And then suddenly he's just with a stone face saying, "Okay, thanks for coming. See you later." How's that supposed to make her feel? How is she not supposed to put on her district attorney hat at that point?
I think if she comes at him attacking his pride, I'm not saying it's the right, you know, I'm not saying that Juan Pablo is the most emotionally sound man. I think there is a point to be made. And I think maybe what Andy was trying to say is that Juan Pablo didn't do the work to connect. And I don't think he did that with any. I think there was a lot of walls up. I think that is something that is a part of his candidacy as the Bachelor. That said, you know, Charlene didn't come in and you know, maybe behind the scenes she told us that he didn't connect with her on an intellectual level. But she didn't go say, "Hey, you're stupid," to his face. And then expect him to be, you know, to bawl his eyes out afterwards. I think if Andy had come in and just been like, "Hey, this isn't, I'm not feeling this emotional connection." And I think that would have given Juan Pablo more room for emotion. Instead, she put him pretty much on the defensive as to why things didn't work out.
I agree with you 100%, Daddy. But also, Wally, before we maybe hash this out completely, I wanted to let you know on this, people can't see that we're on Zoom right now, but behind you, you have a giant elephant in the room that you're not even paying attention to one bit. That's just the fact that he didn't really want her there that much. She's a third place person. She was third place, a distant third place going into this, and maybe he already is on the fence about her. That he's not going to shed a tear. He's not going to shed a tear from Yugoslavia getting a bronze medal. Like, he doesn't care at all. And he shouldn't care. And the fact that, like what Duddy said, the fact that she came in and had the audacity to kind of insult him about it, he's just, you could see it in his face. He's like, "All right, cool, get out of here. Have fun with your, you know, with your bronze medal and maybe a bachelorette turn." You know, like, he didn't give a shit. And America's mad at him for that. I actually am more on board from what Duddy's saying now, and that he's got the rough end of this stick. Not so much him, it's just Andy. It was, what does she expect him to do? What does she expect him to do? Just start bawling? Because he's third place?
So wait a second, Zach. If he doesn't give a shit about her, that's fine. But why is she in third place then?
Yeah, I mean,
why is she competing in the championship round if he doesn't give a shit about her?
I think he was saying, I give a shit about you. I think what is tough here is, like, we can't, even because they're in the same room, she's not even close barometer wise to the other two women. It's like, you know, the band U2, you know, like Bono, and they say U2 is like the UN, where it's like there's four members of the band, it's a democracy, and they're all somewhat even. But like the UN, Bono is the US, right? Like the UN is supposed to be all countries that are sort of on the same level. But then there's like the US is, you know what I mean? Like it's a matter of there's first place at like 10,000 points, we all give to Nikki. 9,000 points, we got Claire. And then down here in the basement at 650 points, we got Andy. And now all of a sudden she's mad because, you know, she needs more fanfare. They need to play the anthem louder when she's on that third place pedestal. Get out of here with that nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree that she, maybe not a distant third, but she was on the outside looking in terms of this battle between Claire and Nikki. And she did this thing, her exit, I feel like contestants have done it before where they say, okay, I'm about to leave, let me do a quick little audition for The Bachelorette here. But I've never seen it done as entertaining as the way that she, not only was it entertaining, but it just felt like from the heart too. It was powerful. And I don't even think she would have gone as deep as she did if Juan Pablo had given something back in return and said, okay, I'm disappointed to hear this, but I that's what I'm saying. That's I feel like that's all I need to hear from him, or that she needed.
It was powerful.
Let me quote Russell Crowe in Gladiator for a second. Were you not entertained?
I'll give you that much.
Explain it to me. I did not feel it. I did not. Yeah. Tell me what I was missing.
Oh, I thought it had everything. I thought that she put him through the ringer. She grilled him. And then that beautiful chef's kiss moment where she's going on a rant. And then he tries to interject and say, you don't know what religion I celebrate. She has the composure to stop everything, to stop all the momentum, look him dead in the eye and say, Catholic, and then continue on with the rest of the rant to say, see, I can listen to you. I can give you something back in return. You could never give that to me. I thought she covered every base there in it.
Please, I could have told you Juan Pablo was Catholic having never had a single conversation with him. That's bullshit. Honestly, I don't, if that was a chef's kiss moment, it might have been the chef's kiss after just frying up a bunch of McNuggets, because there really was no substance there. I'll give you that he didn't give her anything to work with, but I still don't know what his crime is. I still don't know. I still don't know what he did wrong. He didn't ask her enough questions.
Wally likes.
You're telling me that this is the worst bachelor in history because he didn't ask her enough questions in the fantasy suite?
I agree. Duddy, I think I'm just going to wrap this up in a bow. Wally likes the Olive Garden. America likes the Olive Garden. They like just simple, cut and dry, good and evil. And I think that's what this season gave them. And I think the edit that Juan Pablo got at the end of this, I agree with you, Duddy. He's not the worst bachelor in history, one bit. But it's pretty easy to dislike a guy who goes ahead and just says it's okay like that, and goes ahead and say, you know, all right, you can get out of here. Or what was the line? He, you were barely here to be, you know, there was lots of things he said that you could easily make him into a bad guy. Just, and sure, giving him some, you know, guff might be a chef's kiss moment, but it's a chef's kiss at Outlook. It's endless breadsticks, and it's okay. Endless breadsticks are great. It's fine. I'm okay with it. Also, by the way,
I'm not done arguing about this. you're not either. You keep.
No. The thing that I love most about it, entertaining wise, I guess, I think I split the difference between you two, that I wasn't as entertained as Wally, but I did enjoy one moment when we got to see two people who are definitely not in love on this show. And we see it a little bit in the early weeks, especially, but it's fun to see in the final three people dislike each other so much that when at the end of their little kerfuffle, Juan Pablo tries, he's so unamused. He just tries to go for her eyebrow and just tries to rub her little eyebrow after they got done.
And she didn't even want him to touch. She's like, don't even touch me. Don't even come near me.
Oh, so good. That was fun. Go on, Duddy. Yell some more.
I think you make a great point. I think this is two people who aren't in love with each other. I think Juan Pablo did have a problem opening up. But I also think he gives a very valid defense that English is not his first language. I think it's very hard to, you know, to connect with people on a deeply emotional level when with two things. One, I think there's a language barrier which can be overcome. But two, we have a bachelor dating show barrier in which you only have a limited amount of time with these people. And on the one hand, you could say, okay, Juan Pablo is a narcissist. He's, you know, he talks too much about himself. He's name dropping. But you could also say this is a person who feels is nervous and hasn't had alone time with this person and wants to impress them and wants to feel worthy. And, you know, I think it's very easy. If he had done a thing, you know what I mean? Then I'd be the, if Ari sucks, right? Ari dumped Becca on national television. That was horrible.
Yeah.
Juan kept that. That was behind closed doors. They kept that in the locker room. It was Andy who took it outside. If you have a disagreement within your team, you're supposed to keep that under wraps.
Yeah.
Andy put it out in the public, and Juan Pablo, his response to that was, okay, I'm not going to be mad at you. I forgive you.
Yeah.
Or I accept that you don't like me. It's a blow. You know, it's a blow to your pride for someone to dump you, and then you're supposed to be the one. Juan Pablo's supposed to cry. He's supposed to beg. You know, Wally, if I said to you, I don't want to be your friend anymore because you need to pay for Zoom, you know, these Zoom calls are just not doing it for me. Are you going to be like, oh no, Dan, our friendship? Or are you going to be like, fuck this guy? What do you mean? I do pay for Zoom.
The former, Daddy. We've known each other for 3 years now. We've done over 50 episodes yeah. together. We have a past relationship. I got to show you something on the way out the door. You got to show that means something.
Oh, that's, man.
That's all. I mean, I think you make a really valid point that what happens, what's said and done in the fantasy suites, it should stay there. It should stay in the locker room, and disagreements should be settled behind closed doors. And I think that's where, Andy, I agree with you, had a misstep, that to bring it out into the light like that is unfair to Juan Pablo. And being the Bachelor, it's already an unenviable situation, and that made it even more uncomfortable for him. But I think the reason that the goodbye worked so well for me is, like you said, Zach, where it was just 100% clear that she wanted nothing to do with this anymore. Because a lot of times when people leave the show, it just reeks of sour grapes as a last-ditch effort to be like, no, you didn't break up with me, I broke up with you. This worked for me because it's what Andy wanted. She's the one who initiated it and did put Juan Pablo on his heels in the process. But in doing this entertaining goodbye like this, I feel, to me, it kind of reminds me of Steph Curry and the way that he is so good at knocking down three-pointers that it essentially ruined youth basketball because other people try to emulate what he does and they can't do it. They're not as good as not as good at shooters as Steph Curry is. Yeah. And then look at the show that we have today. We have people trying to hijack the tournament and drop in the sour grape bachelorette auditions. And so that's why I think as entertaining as it was in the moment, I feel like it was almost bad for the game in a way.
Yeah, I could see that. Hey, before we move on from this, this has been some high-octane stuff. On three, you guys say who you think Juan Pablo name-dropped in the fantasy suite. Ready? One, two, three. Emilio Estevez.
Daniel Trejo.
Tina Turner.
All right. That's what I thought.
I would love to. That's a great point. I would love to know who it was.
Oh, man.
And let me ask you guys this about Juan Pablo is that, to me, again, I don't think he did anything cancelable or anything that makes me go, oh, this is the worst Bachelor that we've ever had in the Bachelor cinematic universe. But it did seem to me like he feels disenfranchised by the process at this point. When he had that sit-down interview with Chris Harrison, it looked to me very clearly like a player and, excuse me, like a coach and the coach's superstar player on the team who no longer get along. And something's got to give. It was very obvious to me that was happening. What did you guys think of the interaction that Juan Pablo and Chris Harrison had together? And what do you make of their relationship or what it was at that point in the season?
I think that's actually a great point. And I think, you know, we talked a lot. I popped a few blood vessels talking about Andy. But I think that is part of what happened there. I think he, for whatever reason, maybe it's too much time off. Maybe in the break, Juan Pablo met somebody. I don't know, but he does seem, between this week and last week, checked out. He does seem disillusioned with the process. That Andy's leaving can't make it better. I wonder if, to Juan Pablo, Claire and Nikki are both people who he doesn't see himself with, even though he says he has a strong feeling. You know, Chris had to correct him. He said, "You like these women?" You know, in America, like is, that's kind of what you'd say, you know, about your, you know, your copy of NCAA 2012. It's fine. It could use some updates and a better recruiting system. But no, Juan corrects him and says, "Well, you know, my English isn't so good. What I mean is I am very much in love with these women and I will definitely marry them." So yeah, I'm with you. I think that there is some, you know, I think he's a little checked out. I don't know what happened.
At the question of whether or not Chris Harrison and Juan Pablo have beef, I'll answer that and say, I don't think so. I think Chris Harrison's job on the show, and it always has been this, is to be the voice and mind of America. He represents us in that, in this competition. And he was trying to clarify, I think, to get on record, kind of like what a senator does when he's grilling some kind of CEO or something, trying to get him on record to frame up the situation, saying, "You know why America, this is what the problem is. You said like, you meant love. Okay, now we can move on." You know, like that was like where their attention came from in that little one-on-one. In terms of Juan Pablo being checked out, I couldn't agree more. I think he realized maybe during hometowns or something that he was like, "I don't want to visit these people." Even with Nikki's family, which went over the top great. And we know in the future, since this was years ago, that that is kind of what eventually brought him back to he got him away from the process. It's because he didn't want to move to fucking Kansas City. He's in Miami, you know, the land of Pitbull. And, you know, like he's good. He's good down there. He's got a life. I mean, his family is a little complicated with his ex-wife, but other than that, like the dude is fine. And I think you can see that. In that, like, he's like, "I don't want all this. I don't actually want the stakes this high. I don't want this drama. I don't want to pick these two women in St. Lucia." You know, he didn't care anymore. So I think that's what we're seeing right now with the end of his, you know, having fun.
Yeah, it definitely seems like it. And what I attribute it to, and I alluded to this a little bit earlier, is that when the season began, he kept saying the thing that I hate about this process the most is potentially hurting people's feelings and having to say goodbye and even say goodbye to people that I feel that I like and feel like I have a good connection with. And as we said, when Charlene goes, when Chelsea goes, when Renee goes, you could see that he felt it really deeply and he was emotionally really charged by it. He had tears in his eyes. Andy being an obvious exception. And I wonder if maybe he didn't show up any emotion with Andy. And maybe the reason that it seems so awkward between him and Chris Harrison when they're having this sit-down interview together is that he's proverbially been hit in the head one too many times in the boxing ring. He's been hit in the head so many times and he's wondering, you know what? I'm getting knocked around in this boxing ring right now and nothing really is coming of it. Nothing that I'm satisfied with. I'm not making any progress with it. Maybe this doesn't work after all. Maybe all this isn't worth it.
To me, I
think that explains A, why he was such a zombie with Andy, and B, why he seems just so checked out of the whole process.
Yeah, I know from being like a manager a few times in my life when do you have like personality conflicts between your employees and stuff and you just don't want to deal with it anymore and you don't want them mm-hmm. to be angry and you try to, you know, work some interpersonal magic, but some people just don't get along and some things just don't work out. And oftentimes what you end up with is just like, it's going to be all right. I used to have, I was like a band leader at a time and my bandmates got me a present one time that said, it'll work itself out on it. Because whenever in rehearsals with like a tough backing act or something, or a headliner, and things weren't going right, my go-to thing to say was, it'll work itself out. I didn't mean that. It probably wouldn't work itself out. It was probably going to be shitty. But just saying that, like, it'll work itself out, is a mantra that people have. And fucking Juan Pablo's mantra is, it's okay, and that's okay.
But I'm wondering if even he, Mr. Okay, it's okay himself, is wondering if it's going to be okay. It doesn't seem like he even thinks that it will be.
That's the point of a mantra. You just to keep something to come back to, a touchstone, a cornerstone that he can just keep, you know, a foundational thing he can go back to when he's like, I'm on this weird competitive I'm in this competitive dating competition that I don't really, my heart's not in anymore. And this lady's telling me how to use what word I should, I need to make up a synonym for default. It's okay. Yeah. Fuck it. That's what he's saying. It's a fuck it.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Wally, because I think kind of marrying both of your points between Zach and you, Mike, is that I think with the boxer analogy, he has a weak chin, right?
Possibly, yeah.
I think this is a person who struggles to get vulnerable, which is a hallmark of this show. And something that would be my main knock on him, you know, for whatever reason, be it the language barrier, be it his own pride, being that he has a chip on his shoulder from being eliminated week one of the season prior, whatever reason, he doesn't do much to expose himself. And I think what happens is that if you start taking too many hits, if you're not used to taking the big hits, or if you're scared to take the big hits, you go home. And I think you check yourself out, either mentally or physically. And I think what is happening is, you're right, I think he's taken so many hits that now the only thing he can do to protect himself psychologically is to just say, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's a coping phrase, just a mantra. It's fine. That was the one thing I think that all my vitriol towards Andy's in that situation earlier came from. It's just like, let him have it. Just let him have, you know, it is tough. Life's hard. Life's a joke, you know? It's all good.
Yeah, and it seems like, especially in that moment during the sit-down interview where Chris Harrison was, you know, he's like, he can see that in him, I think. He recognizes it. And he genuinely tried to be like, well, look, Juan Pablo, next week's going to be a really big week for you. It could change everything. And then Juan Pablo responded, or it might not. And that, to me, was code for whether it does or whether it doesn't, who gives a shit? I really don't care anymore. I'm going to play out the contract. I'm going to show up till the final whistle, yeah. But I'm not going to give it my all anymore.
Yeah.
I'm not going to hustle. I'm not going to stick my chin out there and make myself vulnerable. I've been hit too many times.
Yeah.
This process has knocked me on my ass too many times, and I'm tired of it.
Well, you know, I didn't really, this should be obvious. And I wish it was something we asked Renee, because it was a thought I had before, but I kind of just forgot about it. I kind of just put it aside, but was Charlene the one?
Hmm. Hmm.
Was Charlene the person that Juan was banking on, and she removed herself from the competition? And then at that point, was it really over?
That's a fascinating question, because out of all the eliminations and he's taken some of them really hard, but that was by far the one that he seemed to have the biggest reaction to.
Are you saying, Duddy, that Charlene is Juan Pablo's rosebud, and that everything that he's experienced, that's the thing that caused him all the trauma that made him turn into this thing that America hates? That Charlene is this important thing that he could never have and never attain, like a childhood. And then now, because of that, everything is just dark and bleak to him, and love isn't real.
I've never seen Citizen Kane.
He didn't say it was Citizen Kane. How'd you know?
All right, I lied. Yeah, I think it's like Rosebud. God. I think you're exactly right. I think that it is possible that with Charlene exiting the picture, maybe a couple more weeks, maybe or one more week, Juan Pablo gave it. But I think right now where he's standing, he's got Crazy Claire and boring Nikki in front of him, and he's looking at himself, oh my God, how did I end up in this situation?
Yeah, I agree.
Exactly. Like, based on how he feels going into this final, it's it seems very possible that Charlene was the one who stole his heart several weeks ago. But in the fantasy suite, who got the biggest steal? We're going to be talking all things swats, deflections, box outs, and downhard gritty defense up next in Steal of the Night. This is the Steal of the Night. Steal of the Night this week, brought to you by the Olive Garden. We'll leave the light on for you. So I think I know where this is going to go, but that's why we play the game. Zach, let's start with you. Who gets steal of the night this week?
Oh, really? No, I think I had a hard time finding a steal this week, to be honest with you. And I had to just give it to some just solid play I saw from our front runner, Nikki, at the very end there after that weird unorthodox rose ceremony where there wasn't really any competition to be heard. I mean, they both got roses. Everything was fine. Instead of just leaving well enough alone, she went the extra mile and took the initiative to give a toast to those two. She took it as a time to look humble, to look gracious, you know, to look confident still. And Claire was sitting there like, fuck, I should have thought of that. You could see it on her face. She was like, damn it, I should have took the initiative on that. It's just good heads up play, you know, just solid right down the middle.
That's a really good point. I would love to see statistical splits from over the years of how many people who got the toast in right before the finals ended up being the champion. I feel like it happens, based on the seasons that we've watched, I feel like it happens almost 100% of the time. It's a really effective way to, in the moment, overtly be like, hey, wishing you the best of luck, show good sportsmanship. But underneath it, what you're really saying is, I've got you. I've got you locked up right now. This tournament's mine.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah, beautifully done. Yeah, great steal on Nikki's part. Daniel, who you got this week?
Well, I've got an honorable mention for the birds chirping during Nikki's I love you speech. By God, they were doing everything they could to steal that moment. It was very annoying. However, my steal of the night, and perhaps maybe the entire season, is English as a second language. For Juan Pablo to use that as a defense, at first I would have called it Bush League. But then the more I saw it, the more I heard it, the more I began to realize this is a groundbreaking function of the game. This is a groundbreaking technique that, you know, I think The Bachelor is always at its best, and sports are always at its best when you can go to a game and you see the players play and you can adopt their moves, right? You could take pieces of their game and they apply to the game you play yourself. And I think Juan Pablo using English as a second language and saying, sorry, it was just lost in translation, is something for any non-English speaker, I think they could just take that for the rest of their lives and be golden. I think that is textbook good defense. And I don't know. I think I might learn another language just to try it out.
Yeah, it's definitely the crutch of the season. And Juan Pablo's been able to rely on it and get away with it on a number of occasions. I never thought of it as a defensive strategy, but that makes sense to me. It's very clever in a way. When moments of doubt, just take a shot at a word that you've never tried before. And then if it doesn't work out, you can just say, well, I didn't know the word to begin with. So two great candidates. And I know that I'm not going to talk you guys into this based on the debate that we just had. But think about Andy for a second. In a matter of hours, she went from being in a pretty distant third place, having no chance with a guy who really didn't seem to give a shit about her at that point, as we discussed, to on the other side of the stoop conversation with him, forcing ABC producers and referees to be like, wow, we have got to put this woman in a situation where there are 30 eligible bachelors vying for her heart. What an incredible turn of events that is. And she made that happen on that stoop. That was the moment where she set it in stone. Unbelievable defensive play, if not within that tournament, just setting up her career for the future. You look at the three women in this tournament, and you look at the end result of that fantasy suite weekend. Out of the three of them, who did the best job of furthering their career? I think it was Andy in that moment. Whether you enjoyed her swan song or not, she did the most to advance her career right then and there in St. Lucia.
Yeah. Still didn't like it. Still didn't like it one bit. But no, I agree. That's fair to say. She was the bachelorette. You know, we got to give her that.
So is Claire.
Kind of ish.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel bad that I'm not going to be able to talk you guys into it and turn you around on this, but I hope that it doesn't, that because of our disagreement, you guys are going to give me the keys to the city of Choketown. I guess we'll find out next in one of our favorite segments on the show, Mayor of Choketown. Mayor Choketown this week is brought to you by NCAA Football 2012. Revisit a great season in college football. So guys, this Fantasy Suite week, there's always some winners coming out of the Fantasy Suites, but there's always some losers too. Daniel A., let's start with you. Who gets your keys to the city of Choketown this week?
Well, it's really tough because I would have given it to Andy, but I think you're right in that she came away with the bachelorette berth. I guess my only defense in still giving her the keys is that I think she would have had it anyway. I think you look at the other contestants from this season. I think Claire was a little too ahead of her time. We'll see next week what happens with that. I think Nikki is, to be honest, kind of vanilla. You try to get Charlene, perhaps, but maybe Charlene says no. You try to get Renee, perhaps, but we know Renee's love story isn't going to be conducive to that. So I think you're pretty. Andy is great bachelorette material. She has the great job. She has the great personality. She's quick. She's funny. She's the whole package. I don't think it was necessary to cast any doubt. That's how I took it. That with her speech, she made it look like someone who would take unfair shots. But that's just my take.
So we got one for Andy. Zach, are you going to make it too?
No, I'm not. Now, I know, Wally, you put that Chekhov's gun out there to try to goat me into giving an in-person Mara Choketown like we did last week to you, but I'm not going to take that bait. I'm not taking that bait. I'm going to do a little inauthentic one. As you guys know, I'm a seafaring person. I've sailed those waters around St. Lucia many a time, around the pitons there, and I've seen a lot of great boats in my day, and boats, the cool thing about boats is they have names. And the fact, when they did that little shot on the back of that yacht that they were riding through the waters of St. Lucia there. And the name of the boat was Pixel. Pixel. Not a name. I mean, maybe a rabbit you could name Pixel. A bad movie from 2013. I think the thing that bugs me so much about it is there's so many good boat names. You know what I mean? There's so many good ways you can go about it. And the rule about boat names is it's either a pun or it's a classy lady name. And those two things work, that's time. That's thousands of years we've been doing it that way. Real life or, Caribbean Queen, Monica, something that really rings true, And these guys go with Pixel? Get the fuck out of here.
Is there anywhere in the world, though, where Pixel could have been the name of a classy woman?
No. Absolutely not. Not even a pun,
Yeah, question asked, question. Yeah, I definitely agree with that rule about boat names. The one exception to that is I came across a boat one time where the name was Frank White, which was Biggie Small's other alias.
Yeah,
the other rap name that he went by occasionally, which I loved that.
No, that works. I mean, a name is great. A proper noun's good. Pixel, get out of here. It wasn't a proper noun until the movie came out. And even then, it's like barely holding on to that status. Yeah, no, I couldn't take it.
Yeah, it is a little bit of a weak name, especially when you're sailing right across the cameras on ABC and you got this primetime shot on Monday night. You'd hope it'd be something more exciting, more elegant than that. For me, again, this is a key that I don't hand out without empathy because he really was in an unenviable position at this point in the tournament. But the fact is, whatever Juan Pablo said in the fantasy suite that night, whatever it was, name dropping, talking about himself, whatever stories he went on too long about, it made Andy go from being so smitten with him that she was considering him as a husband to being like, in a matter of hours, get me on the first flight out of St. Lucia back to Pasadena. In a matter of hours, she switched her mindset like that. She caught the ick that badly. And I know it's a tough situation. It's tough to execute. But it's got to be better than that one, Pablo. You got to at least make her want to stay on the island. Be okay with you trying to get a an eyelash off of her eye. She wanted to get out of there so badly. She wouldn't even let him do that. Wouldn't even let her make a wish off of his fingertip with her eyelash.
Do you think it was like Andy Garcia or someone like that that he name dropped that just like gave her the ick so badly? Was it just like a maybe Scott Baio? Just someone, some South Florida personality maybe that is just so egregious that she just wanted to throw wine in his face.
That's a great question. What would be the one for you guys where a name drop so distasteful to you that you would get out of there with even somebody that you like?
Eric Trump, probably.
Mine's easy.
Why? One for Eric Trump.
Chris D'Elia.
That's mine too. Dude, that's mine too.
Wow, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. Words right out of my mouth. Yeah. He's so bad that I can't trust people who like him.
Yeah.
That's one of those. Yeah, if that name was dropped, I would be out of there so. I don't care if I'm with Helena Troy. Yeah. I'd be out of there so fast.
Yeah, it's kind of like hanging out at your cousin and they start talking about Joe Rogan. I agree, but yeah, I mean, I got to
forget about your big crush on Helena Troy.
Yeah, Mayor choked down to Chris D'Elia, MVP going to Helena Troy as always. Coming up next, though, we've got a couple of news issues to address in a very special edition of Ring Rosa Road. Ring Rosa Road this week brought to you by Glade Candles. No one can tell with Glade Candles. So a big news report that came out of Bachelor Nation this week is that it looks like ABC is going to be picking up production again on Clear Season of The Bachelorette. And it looks like it's going to be, we're going to be getting the quarantine season that we thought we might get, where Claire and the contestants aren't allowed to leave and they're not allowed to let anybody into the production. What do you guys think of a potential quarantine season with Claire?
I mean, something's better than nothing the way I look at it. I would rather have them be safe, obviously, but also, you know, I think it's interesting. These last couple seasons, to be honest, guys, have kind of felt samey a little bit, especially the leaps between Hannah's and Colton's to Peter's and all that thing. I think it'll be good for the show to have to kind of, they say art, what is it? Constraints are the friend of art, you know, like when you have to make do with something like that. I think it can only make for good television. And I think Claire, you know, she's not her first rodeo. She knows what to do. I think it'll be good.
I couldn't agree more with everything you said. I think they need to change up the franchise a little bit. This is a great opportunity to do it. I think Claire's the right bachelorette to do it with. I am a little bit wary of them leaning too hard on any gimmicks, but I'm also excited for them to try new things. This isn't Claire's first rodeo, so it should be good to go.
Yeah, I agree with what both you said, and along the lines of what Zach said. When I heard this announcement, it made me think a lot about the production of Jaws, the famous Steven Spielberg movie. And what happened during production that a lot of people don't know is that they originally had this mechanical shark to be the villain, and the shark wasn't working. I don't know what was going wrong with it, but for whatever reason, they just couldn't get it to operate. And they didn't have the budget to try to fix it, bring in a new model. It would have been, they didn't want to try a cheaper version of it. And then Steven Spielberg, very brilliantly and in a game-changing way, he said, you know what? What if we do it this way? What if we have it so that people don't see the shark? And we develop the dread that way. And that is a classic example of when it seems like nothing is going your way and your options are really limited, how it can actually be a huge boon for creativity. And I think that's exactly what we have here. On paper, we may all be thinking to ourselves, oh man, they're not going to be able to take these trips to St. Lucia and to the Caribbean and across the world and have all these international dates that we love to see with all these international guests. Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe that's going to force Chris Harrison and his staff to be like, okay, if we need to stay in the mansion, we've got to be really creative about this. And we've got to put a lot of thought into what these dates look like inside the mansion or inside the limited space that we have to work with. And I think getting back to the drawing board and having to think about that is going to be a really beneficial exercise for their team. And I can't wait to see what they do. And especially, you know, in the Bachelor Mansion, we've seen so little of that space. We know what the pool looks like, and we know what the living room looks like. But I feel like a mansion like that, there's got to be maybe like trap doors and secret rooms and just so much more space that you can explore that can play a part in how the speed dating unfolds in clear season. And I can't wait to see what happens.
See some pantries. Yeah. That'd be nice.
Yeah. We also want to take a moment to advertise the fact that last week we had one of the best guests that we've ever had in Renee Maynard, who obviously came in fourth place during Juan Pablo season. And she was so cool about coming back on the show and telling us about the Final Four and just her whole experience with The Bachelor in general. Guys, what was your favorite revelation that came out of that interview?
I think the fact that she also agreed with it, and I think we heard it a little bit from Lucy, but she was more sort of articulate in putting how much everyone liked each other. That was really, I was happy to see that the thing that we thought and that we felt and just kind of assumed was true. That was a really validating moment for me and us and our ability to read people.
I think for me, it was, you know, you talk a lot about being there for the right reasons on The Bachelor. That's, you know, one of the hallmark things of the show. And I think in recent times, the audience, the franchise, everyone around The Bachelor have grown cynical. It's almost expected that you're there for the Instagram followers. You're there for the wrong reasons. You're there to get screen time, to do all the things that don't involve winning a championship ring. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was just refreshing to see that Renee, she's a believer. You know, she was someone who is clearly, who was and is clearly after love and has found love. And to me, embodied what it meant to be there for the right reasons. So just to know that The Bachelor has reached out to the, has gotten those type of people, that those types of people exist within the player pool. It helped me shed a little bit of cynicism.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point that there was no ulterior agenda with her from day one in practice and in the game. She was there to win a championship ring with Juan Pablo. She wanted that with all her heart. And when her run came to an end, she didn't go off to Bachelor in Paradise or try to campaign to be the Bachelorette. Not that's necessarily a bad thing or something to be avoided, but she 100% was in on trying to end up with Juan Pablo. And it is refreshing to hear. I was also really fascinated by, and it actually made me feel really foolish too, is when we've covered hometown dates in the past, we've talked a lot about how the players coach their family members. And I was really surprised to find out that you really don't get to talk to your family leading up to the date. That was incredible to hear that, because my understanding was you at least have a phone call with your family and you have a chance to be like, okay, Dad, make sure you tell this story. Mom, make sure you don't do this, etc. Here's the order of how I want you to talk to him when he arrives at the house. There's none of that. He just walks into the house and then what will be, and you just try to coach on the fly the best you can. And it actually makes it even more impressive the way that they're able to orchestrate their family members throughout the night. And so that was really interesting to hear. So yeah, those are three of many things that Renee revealed during the episode. It's a great episode. Make sure you check it out. And as I'm sure you can tell from listening to this electric last hour, this is a great episode too. And we bring it every single week. We love bringing you Bachelor content. And we thank you so much for checking us out every week and spreading the word about us. If you haven't yet, please tell your friends about us and tell them to find us on iTunes, on Spotify, on Stitcher, anywhere podcasts can be found, we're there waiting for you. Give us a click. And if you listen to us on iTunes, make sure you leave us a rating, a review, subscribe to us. All of it helps us become a better show. Additionally, we have a growing social media presence, both on Twitter and on Instagram. Our handle for both of those is at Bachelor Zone Pod. Make sure to reach out with us. You can comment on our post, send us a DM. We check it frequently, and we always respond really quickly. And always love to hear from you. This Bachelor Classic season has been so fun for us, and we can't wait to get to the championship in a couple weeks. But next week, we've got everybody's favorite night in the All-Star game, where you have people like Renee, Charlene, and Kat, and some of your favorite people from the season are going to have one last chance to give Juan Pablo a piece of their mind. And we can't wait for you to join us for that. Until then, for Zachary Pike and Daniel A. Duddy, I'm Michael Wally, and this is The Bachelor Zone.